Good evening. This is an interview for the Michigan Writers Series, Friday, March 14, 2003. I'm speaking tonight with Liesl Litzenberger, an assistant professor of English at Central Michigan University. Her fiction and essays have been published in numerous journals, and the Carnegie Mellon University Press published her short story collection, Now You Love Me, in 2001. Welcome to MSU, Liesl.
Thank you, Stephanie.
I enjoyed the stories in Now You Love Me, but I was sometimes unnerved by them because they hit so close to home. I'm interested in knowing a little more about your childhood and what was the inspiration for this collection.
I grew up in northern Michigan, actually in the Harbor Springs area, and so when I think about a place to call home, I always think of that area and everything I've written fictionally. Even when I've tried to write about different places, always ends up being placed in northern mm-hmm. Michigan. So for me, the stories grew out of the landscape. And when people ask about, you know, my childhood or connections with my childhood to my fiction, one way I think about it is that they're all emotionally true, if that makes any sense. So nothing in the book happened in my life, but there were certainly people in and out of my life when I was a child who these characters in different parts represent. So northern Michigan is, of course, a resort area, and when mm-hmm. I was growing up in northern Michigan, it tended to be much, much more isolated in the winter. In fact, things just pretty much shut down.
Yes.
So during the summer, the tourists would come in, and everyone would come to stare at the lake, and then when fall arrived, they would leave, and mm-hmm. so things would be shut down. It would be extremely quiet. You'd have 12-foot snowdrifts.
Yeah.
So it was a very magical place in some ways to grow up because of its isolation. We got 2 TV channels, no malls. When the nearest mm-hmm. McDonald's had opened in Gaylord, it was a huge event, and we would always ask our mother to drive us there, just, you know, like an hour away. So yeah. it was a big drive. So I think it was such a formative place to grow up mm-hmm. that I think all of my writing, for as long as I write, will in some way be tied to that place. So none of the events in the book happened, and none of the people are amalgamations of lots of people. Mm-hmm. But I just, when I set about trying to write these stories, or these linked stories, this collection, I wanted to tell them from Annie's point of view, from the child's point of view, and in her voice as much as possible, just because it seemed to match that strange and sometimes frightening landscape that far northern Michigan can be, in that in childhood, I think children perceive things so beautifully, and they see the world in a way that adults simply cease to see the world as mm-hmm. we grow up and sort of start seeing things in a more literal sense.
Mm-hmm.
Children are wonderful with metaphor. I mean, seeing
yes.
something and thinking it is something else or it looks like something else. So the landscape and the sense of childhood and the sense of wonder, and with everything that goes on around these characters in relation to Annie's family, and her attempts to figure out what is actually happening, and having, I think, a fairly accurate sense of what is happening in her family, but not having the language to articulate it.
Mm-hmm. She seemed to have some of the thoughts, though.
Yeah.
That she said, you know, several times, mm-hmm. I don't know the word for that, or she would think it. She didn't know quite the right word to use to describe something, but she could articulate
right.
the thought.
Yeah, and I think that what happens with all of us, that things happen in our childhood that we understand on some basic level. We mm-hmm. know what's happened, but it's not until you're an adult that you can look back and sort of say, oh, that's what that was, or
yeah.
that's what was happening, or oh, that person was depressed, or mm-hmm. oh, you know, that person left because of this.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're a child, you see it in a way that you understand it, but you don't have the words to sort of articulate exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, Annie is only 9 years old, and she's certainly very precocious.
Yeah.
And I could relate. I mean, I too was, you know, wise beyond my years at nine and very aware of the world around me, even if I didn't fully understand it. But and so in that respect, I felt that Annie's portrayal was very honest. But how would you respond to people who question the authenticity of her voice and say that it's you looking back as an adult and you're able to put very adult words and thoughts into her?
It's such a sleight of hand. It's such a magic trick, I think, when you're trying to write in a child's perspective, in a child's voice, because, of course, literally, if we were reading the thoughts and voice of a nine-year-old, mm-hmm. we would make it through one paragraph because it's just not something that can sustain mm-hmm. a long story. So you have to do this kind of magic trick or sleight of hand in which you do go ahead and not necessarily give them the language that they're going to have later to articulate things, but you find ways to tell the story from their point of view, but tell it in a way that makes it both interesting and absorbing enough for the adult reader. And it is a balancing act. So you try to find ways that Annie can articulate mm-hmm. something that doesn't sound like an adult articulating it. So I rely a lot upon her looking at the physical world and seeing things that look like other things or that remind her of other things. Mm-hmm. And in that way, sort of putting things together rather than having big epiphanies where she suddenly realizes. And most of what's going on in the stories isn't ever really explained fully. You never really know
yes.
what's wrong with the mother. No one ever really comes out and explains that, which is another big component of childhood that adults don't often explain everything mm-hmm. fully because they don't think you could handle it maybe as
yeah.
a child or fully.
Well, I agree. You know, there seem to be times when Paige wanted to tell her kids what was going on, how she was feeling.
Yeah.
And would start and then stop because she didn't think that they would understand.
Right. And it probably would be better if adults went ahead and explained things, but,
yeah.
but they don't often.
And that's what I thought about one of the characters, the very tall, big guy in the last story.
Oh, yeah.
Who spoke
Harvey.
Nuego, right? Nuego.
Yeah.
Who spoke very matter-of-factly to the children, telling them about his girlfriend, and,
right.
and he just was treating them like little adults, and I thought, hey, that's pretty cool, because
yeah.
he's the first, although Shepherd, too, is the mother's.
And Susie Medicine Hat, too,
yeah.
the babysitter.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there are enough people who are in and out of their lives who do sort of speak to them, but it's a weird polarity because mm-hmm. people either ignore them and don't explain much at all, or they treat them sort of, you know, as little adults.
Yes.
But in a way, that's helpful too.
Yeah,
so.
It works.
Yeah.
And it can convey the children's confusion, too, about the things going on in their lives.
Right, and there's always that sense of mystery, I think, in childhood, and that's what intrigues me, sort of mystery and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And difficulty, and I think there's a real sadness when, you know, we are at an age where we start to see the world, or we're supposed to see the world in a particularly serious light. And those moments, I think, that happened around the age of 12 or 11, when you're really leaving the world of childhood,
mm-hmm.
and you really can't go back there, you know, which is why I think fiction is so wonderful, because you can
yeah.
rewrite it in
yeah.
some ways. Yeah.
Well, these stories are set in 1976,
mm-hmm.
which was still a relatively innocent time for our society.
Yeah.
I mean, the children could go trick-or-treating by themselves, as Annie and her five-year-old brother do.
Yeah.
And most people wouldn't automatically assume the worst of hitchhikers or phone the police if they thought someone was stalking them.
Right.
But I know you were about 9 years old in 76, right?
So, yeah, roughly, yeah.
Why did you choose that time period?
I just found that a really interesting period, and I think not necessarily even because I was roughly that age at that time, more that I think it's a time or was a time in our society in which sort of post-hippie or still, you know, that sort of hippie lifestyle in which adults acted or were allowed to act very childishly in mm-hmm. a way that, and I don't mean that in a negative sense at all, just that things were a bit freer. So, for instance, the character of Shepherd is this somewhat of a drifter, you know, will never really have a serious job, and it's just kind of a nut. And Paige is also, although Paige sort of gets punished for her nuttiness, but I think it was still acceptable in some ways to live in a way that would be considered sort of a freer way of life, I think, and especially mm-hmm. in a small town, people didn't maybe bother you as much as they would now, I suppose, if you were living there. I mean, I think there's certain pockets around the country where you can still mm-hmm. live that way, but
they're few and far between.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this being the Michigan Writer Series, we always ask our guests a standard question. You've mm-hmm. kind of addressed this already. What does living in Michigan bring to your writing? But since you've said that you almost always end up setting mm-hmm. your fiction in northern Michigan, mm-hmm. In the area where you grew up, could you imagine setting your fiction anywhere where you lived? I mean, do you think that that's just a natural outgrowth of writing, that we write what we know?
Yes. In fact, I was living in Florida a couple of years ago, and I was in Sarasota, actually, mm-hmm. as a writer-in-residence, and they have a very large Amish population.
Really?
Yeah, really large Amish population.
Wow.
So it was interesting because I'm a runner, so I'd get up and run every morning, and there were Amish people who would go, and they would be standing out in the water collecting mussels, I think, or some sort of clam, something like that, to sell. I mean, they have a huge business community in Sarasota. They have restaurants and stores. So, and I would see them at the beach in their, you know, full Amish clothing with heavy pants and shirts and hats. And so I ended up writing about that because I felt because they were dressed for winter. I mean, they mm-hmm. were dressed for a really different place, and I would see them on the beach and all these other tourists in their bathing suits, and the Amish in their full, heavy kind of suits, black wool suits and hats. And so I was really struck by that. So in a way, I was still writing about some northern people who were in a different place. But I think Michigan is unusual in that there is still so much that's wilderness, or so much mm-hmm. that is still quite wild. But it's also, you know, in southern Michigan, very industrialized and built up. So, I mean, that sort of separation fascinates me. But one thing that I've written about that also really interests me is why people choose or end up living in places that are very difficult to live, with, you know, winters that are 8 months long, mm-hmm. and I think it really shapes who you are in a way that's mm-hmm. That's revealing of character. So I like to sort of put my characters against backdrops that are somewhat wild or challenging or beautiful and also sort of scary.
Yeah. Good. That was a great answer.
Oh, thank you.
You know, given that I was trying to figure out how to ask that kind of question.
Yeah.
And now, changing topics a little, I found an article that you wrote on the New Issues Press.
Oh, yeah.
It was in a 2000 issue of Poets and Writers magazine. How did you get involved in writing that?
I was asked to do that because they were looking for a regional Michigan writer, and I actually went to graduate school at Western, so I knew something about the press and knew Herbert Scott, who was the mm-hmm. editor. So it was easy enough for me to go over and write a profile of it. And that presses, small press publications really interest me, mm-hmm. presses that are being started all over, and that's a particularly honorable venture. I mean, he's really publishing some wonderful poetry and
fiction. We've had several of the writers here.
Actually, in Michigan, a lot of them are Michigan writers, and it just never ceases to amaze me. There's so many really wonderful writers in Michigan. actually my article was way too long because I started describing the building,
mm-hmm.
and it was an older building, and there were rooms mm-hmm. with just all this dusty furniture and taxidermied animals
yeah.
because it had been a science
I like
building.
That, though.
Yeah, and so I wrote quite a bit about that, and they had to cut most of it. So I have
okay.
a hard time staying on track with nonfiction. I mean, I tend to be, there again, I'm really interested mm-hmm. in place.
Yes,
I'm
sort of say you like the landscape.
Yeah, I like the landscape of mm-hmm. the stuffed bobcat was just as interesting as
yeah.
as other parts of it.
Well, I would say you'd certainly agree that small presses are vital for
yes.
you know, publishing new writers
yeah.
and even established ones. But do you think small presses will continue to flourish in these dire economic times?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I'm sure of it because, you know, larger publishing houses continue to condense and, you know, so many different book imprints and publishing
mm-hmm.
houses are being pulled together
yeah.
under one really large corporate
yeah.
label. And so it's harder and harder for first-time writers to land a book contract. And I think it's actually smarter to go with a smaller press, especially for a first book,
mm-hmm.
and work your way up. I think that you can get a great book contract for a first book with a large house, but if it doesn't do well and they're not willing to spend the money for advertising, then
mm-hmm.
they're much less willing to purchase a second book
yes.
or to... So it's kind of a catch-22,
mm-hmm.
but there's just so much incredible writing out there, and I think that these outlets are more popular than ever, and especially for fiction, because
yeah.
of the difficulties with larger presses, larger publishing houses.
Good. Well, I know that you're currently working on a novel,
mm-hmm.
so it's said in your bio, so please tell me more about that and any other projects you have in the works.
Yeah, I'm working on a novel, again, set in northern Michigan, and it's written from the male POV. So
okay.
my first collection was child's
yes.
point of view. This is a male point of view. Actually, it alternates between first and third person, but mostly first person male. About a guy who's been through kind of a terrible accident and is just coming out of it. So I'm just sort of working my way through it, but it's set in northern Michigan. And it's going to take place over a very sort of concentrated, shorter period of time with lots of dipping back into flashback. And I don't have the same characters at all that I have in this book, but
mm-hmm.
I feel like they could live down the street.
Okay.
I have a character named Ramona Blackwater, who certainly could have shown up in the story collection, and any of them. I feel like it's in the same vicinity. It's
okay.
a little bit more, I don't want to say magical realist, but if you could do kind of northern magical realist,
mm-hmm.
then this would be. So it's a little bit...
I was going to ask if you plan to write any more about Annie and her family and friends.
I miss them. It's funny when I was thinking about this reading, when you finish a collection, and it's been a long time
mm-hmm.
now, and I think about them as, you know, friends that I don't see anymore. And so I feel, you know,
yeah.
you miss them because you become attached to them. So I really love the new characters I'm working with, but I was really attached to them. I mean, it's sort of, I think I always tell my students that you have to love your characters, even the really despicable
mm-hmm.
ones, and you know, especially the really despicable ones. And I do have characters who do crazy things and kind of bad things, but I really have great affection for them. So actually some independent film people were working on a film script of it. So
really?
At some point, yeah, which is the odds of a film ever being made, even with all
sure.
the support. But so, you know, who knows? But yeah.
Well, it'd be nice if something turned out.
Yeah,
I wish you luck with your novel and
thank
other
you.
Projects and your
thanks.
Teaching. And thank you very much, Liesl, for participating
well,
in the
so
MSU Libraries Writer Series. And good luck tonight.
Thanks so much, Stephanie.